Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. I'm your host, Em Robertson, and I'm so stoked that you're tuning in. It is 2025, the year started with a bang, and I am more than ready to be back releasing episodes after a great break. I hope you all took some good time off this holiday and that the year has just started off so well. This week, I am really excited to welcome Ryan Sands to the podcast. He is an absolute trail running legend. He hardly needs any introduction, and Ryan is also somebody who has been interviewed often, so I tried to take a slightly different approach. I really chatted to him about kind of some of his various running experiences that date back to his early success in his early days. We focus quite a lot on events like the Leadville 100 Miler, as well as Western States, and just kind of those sensations and feelings that he had when the plan was either coming together or falling apart. We also touch a little bit on his latest book, Run, Risk, Reward, and just some of the insane things that went on that he has documented. So if you haven't read that yet, I would highly suggest it. And yeah, Ryan does give us a sneak peek into some of those things in this episode, and we also chat a little bit about his goals for 2025. So Cocodona, I'm sure many of you have heard of it, but if you haven't, look it up. We talk about it a little in this episode as well, and yeah, it's just great to get some of Ryan's insights, to hear about his dreams and to relive some of his experiences. So I hope you all enjoy this episode, and as usual, I am so thankful for the partnership with Carbon Endurance. They have made it possible to continue releasing episodes and just have really fueled and backed the dream from the beginning. There are some exciting updates coming from that team in the next few weeks, so you guys can keep your ears to the ground, and I will bring you some news about some new and exciting products that they will be sharing with all of us in the next few weeks. Great. I hope you guys enjoy the episode. It's awesome to be back, and I will see you next week for the next one. Great. Guys, welcome back to another episode of Trail Culture. We're still in season two, but now we are into 2025, which is crazy. And this week, I'm stoked to welcome a legend in the trail running community. This is someone who hardly needs an introduction. I think he can push through some of the gnarliest 100-miler courses, and can also be found flying through the marathon distance field. He's run all around the world, from Antarctica to China to Egypt. So it's really great to welcome Ryan Sands to the podcast today. And yeah, we're going to be chatting about Ryan's sports journey, his latest book, his journey with his coach, and more. So stoked to have you. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
Thanks for having us in your kitchen.
Stoked to be here. Stoked to have you here, should I say.
In the house where you ran 100 miles during lockdown, we were just discussing this. I'm sure you're glad you don't have to do that anymore.
I hope we never go into another lockdown again.
At least you know that it can be done. You can keep training in your own home.
Yeah, the strange thing with that, I actually didn't do a lot of running during lockdown. I just, that's why I ran 100 miles. I figured if I ran 100 miles, I could take a few weeks off afterwards. So that was the plan, at least.
Ryan, how are you feeling post-UTCT? I don't know if you just came back from a run now when we arrived, if you've recovered, but yeah, that was short and sharp and fast. And I know when listeners tune in, it will be last year's event, but yeah, how was it running on home trails?
Yeah, it's always really magical to run on home trails, and really special. Like you mentioned, I've run all around the world, but there's something just so special running at home and kind of having friends, family, home community there. So it was
Pacific.
Was really cool. And training wise, kind of my coach has put me straight back into training. So it was, and even like leading up to it, wasn't really a big focus. But I mean, lining up at the start line of a race on home soil in a race with the prestige as Ultra Trail Cape Town, I definitely had a lot of stoke and a lot of psych to do my best out there.
And I think you, earlier this year at Mutt, you took a lot of joy in giving the youngsters some hard time and overtaking them in the last couple of Ks on the marathon distance, and running something shorter like this and also against kind of some of the younger guys. Is it still something that is fun for you? You enjoy it?
Yeah, to be honest, it's probably more fun than the longer stuff. I mean, like running Ultra Trail Cape Town, the 55K, I joked with a lot of people afterwards and said it was the perfect race. You kind of stop as things are starting to get sore.
Yes.
Whereas like 100Ks or 100 miles, like, I mean, you still, within 100 mile, I'd still have 100 and odd Ks to go. So it's still like a long way. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoy mixing it up. And
epic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that's what's always interest me and intrigued me about the sport is trying lots of different things, racing, doing projects.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I mean, it's cool to just mix it up and try new things.
Yeah, change it up. And Ryan, I mean, I think this probably is one of the most asked questions for you of, you know, how did you get into trail running and the sport? But just like a rundown, maybe for those who don't know, of like history, where it started and how many years you've been doing this for.
Yeah, so how I got into the sport, I guess like growing up, I never kind of dreamt of being a runner or a trail runner. I didn't even know trail running existed, or it probably didn't exist back there, or at least not in South Africa. I went to school in Cape Town to Sachs and played a lot of rugby, dreamt of being a Springbok rugby player. But yeah, I think I stopped growing in about standard eight. So yeah, so, I mean, still played rugby competitively at school, and I tried to at university, but I got steamrolled a couple of times and realized that maybe I had to do something different. So yeah, after that, spent a lot of time at the beach. And I mean, even in my teenage years, spent a lot of time in the outdoors. So always loved the outdoors. But it was only my last year at university that I joined a bunch of mates who were running the Knysna Marathon, or they were actually running the Knysna Half Marathon. But I only decided to join them like 2 or 3 weeks out.
Oh,
and
wow.
The half marathon entries had closed or were full already. So I was like, half marathon, same, kind of being young and naive and a student. I thought I'd just run the marathon. And I mean, yeah, ran it on very minimal training, basically no training, but absolutely loved it. And just that feeling of fulfillment of actually setting myself a goal and achieving it. And yeah, after that, came back to Cape Town, joined my local running club, Heartbeat Harriers. And yeah, very quickly through them, discovered the trails and Table Mountain and entered a couple of local trail races. And then, yeah, before I knew it, I remember one Sunday I was kind of Googling extreme trail races and up popped the Four Deserts website. So I decided to enter the Gobi Desert race. At the time, I actually didn't even know where the Gobi Desert was. So did a bit of Googling. But yeah, I entered the race, actually put in a lot of training and hard work into that, but never in my wildest dreams that I expect to win it. But yeah, I won that in 2008. And I mean, yeah, I guess since then it's been a life-changing journey for me, running all around the world. And I mean, yeah, looking back, I mean, that's nearly 17, 18 years ago.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's just been so epic.
And I mean, you mentioned now like trail running wasn't necessarily a developed sport yet. And then you weren't just running a normal marathon or ultra marathon. You entered something pretty extreme. Where were you drawing like or getting advice from to do these things? Or were you like, I'm just going to wing it? I mean, because like the weather, what you need to eat, there's like quite a lot of logistical planning that needs to go into it.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, back then there wasn't a lot of advice out there. So, I mean, it was challenging. I mean, I even just when I turned fully professional, I always say it's the same as like kind of starting a job, but there's no job description. You just got to figure it out for yourself and kind of put a plan in place and kind of set up a team around you. Which, yeah, I mean, I think I've been lucky to have an amazing team around me. And yeah, I guess I had a bit of luck on my side too, and managed to figure it out.
Oh my word, that's crazy. And getting there, like those early days, Ryan, meeting other people who I think maybe internationally running, trail running was a bit more developed, and showing up as a youngster. I mean, what were kind of the comments, or how were you like received into the trail community? Do you remember any kind of interactions with people?
Yeah, I remember like in the early years, And it's, I think it's just like, shows how much that the sport has evolved and developed. I mean, most of the guys trail running were in their 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I'm 42 and I'm an old belly. Like most of the, like the young and up and coming guys are in their early 20s.
Yeah.
So the sport has evolved a lot. But I mean, when I first started running, I was definitely kind of seen as this like young kid on the block. I mean, even I remember the Gobi Desert race when I won the first stage, everyone was like, who's this young dude? He's going to crash and burn. He's never going to make it through the race. He's not going to finish. And to be honest, I didn't even know if I was going to finish the race. I just thought, flip, like, if I can win this first stage, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I gave it my all and then
kind
of, managed to like repeat that on the next couple of days. But like met some really, really cool people. And also someone like Dean Karnaz is the famous American ultra runner. I'd actually read his book, one of the few books I've read, Ultra Marathon Man. I remember reading that before the Gobi Desert race. So Dean was out actually competing in the Four Desert Series. So he was running the Gobi Desert. So, I mean, getting to meet someone like Dean, had like a massive impact on my life and career. And I mean, I drew a lot of inspiration from him in the early years, and he gave me a lot of guidance and kind of how to become a fully professional ultra runner, because I mean, back then, like 2008, there weren't too many kind of fully professional ultra runners.
And Ryan, I mean, that's where it started. And I think you're known for that. Your first book, you kind of take people through that journey. And then you went from like doing extreme things like that to starting to do milers, I think, relatively quickly. And then doing something like the Leadville 100, where you ran a really strong time that I think stood for many years before it was kind of broken. And I think it's still in the top 7 or the top 10 of the fastest times on that course. And I mean, so you did Leadville 100 and then you went on to win Western States a couple of years later as well. And going back to like those early miler days, what was it like kind of taking it to that distance, going onto the American scene and running these like kind of ancient races and the like steeped in history, and you competing in like very competitive fields and you still kind of learning and still relatively young, if you can remember those details?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Leadville 2011 is some of my favorite memories in the sport, and it was just such a cool era. Mm-hmm. I read the book Born to Run, which I'm sure a lot of people have read, and I mean that was a big inspiration for me wanting to go and run the Leadville 100 miler. So I mean, I got there, I think it was 5 or 6 weeks ahead of schedule to acclimatize to the altitude. But I remember just like spending time in the town was just such a surreal experience. Like as I'd met Micah True Caballo Blanco from the book Born to Run. So I spent a lot of time with him. And you kind of read about all these characters, and then when you actually get to hang out with them, it's just so incredible. So many special memories. I mean, training wise, it was tough. Like I kind of put in a lot of hard work to get ready for 100 miles and running at altitude. Just super, such awesome memories. I guess I'd come from running like multi-day stage races to running 100 mile race, which is quite different. So, I mean, back then, like the main former social media guys had blogs. And it was very cool that like them, I quite enjoyed that the American guys kind of called a spade a spade. They were like, like Ryan can run multi-stage races, but there's no ways he's going to do well at 100 miler. So it was cool that, I mean, guys just said it how it was.
Yeah.
Just a really kind of cool vibe and era. Still like super free spirited.
Mm.
I was again, lucky to have, a really incredible support team around me for the Leadville 100 miler, like the likes of Anna Frost paced me.
So cool.
Such special memories.
And kind of coming through the aid stations, and I don't know if you can remember, like, did you lead the race for most of the way? Was there a pack and there was a bit of kind of strategy? And where were you, like, how did you know on that first miler, like, where to push and, like, kind of check, am I going to put myself in the bin or am I going to win? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, quite interesting. I remember, like, after 30, 40Ks, I saw Dean Leslie from the African Attachment. He was out there filming a docu for Salomon on me doing the race. And, I mean, I said to Dean, like, my legs, my quads are blown already. Yeah. Only 30, 40Ks in. I was like, it's going to be a long day out. And, I mean, I think, it's in Leadville's an out and back race, and like there's a big pass, Hope Pass, that you got to kind of climb over just before the turnaround point. And I got to just before Hope Pass, and I think I dropped back to about fifth place. And I mean, I was
toast.
Yeah, not feeling good. But then I'd started going up Hope Pass, and like I passed a couple of people, and then I remember dropping down the other side, and the guy leading the race, I don't remember his exact name, but he was known as a fruitarian. All he ate was fruit. Quite an interesting guy, quite like vocal. And I remember like on the backside of Hope Pass running down and catching up to him and running behind him. And he suddenly like looked around and he like looked at me and he was like, are you in the race? And I was like, I didn't quite hear him. And then he said, like, are you in the fucking race? And then I said, yes. And then, like, I passed him. And I mean, it was just,
And that was it.
That was me. I was in the lead. And then from the turnaround point, you could pick up paces. And I picked up Anna Frost. Yeah. And I mean, she kind of really made me push to get back over Hope Pass and to the other side. And, so I basically led from the turnaround point. But I can remember, like, the last 30, 40 miles, like, my legs have never been that destroyed. Like, I mean, running the uphills were okay, but the downhills were just, like, kind of my quads were just completely blown.
Yeah.
Just seeing, like, the footage now of, like, how broken I was. I mean, I had a pacer, I think it was, like, Phil Villeneuve from Salomon, Canada, pacing me for the last 10 miles. And I kept hearing people behind me like talking. I was like, are the guys catching us? And there was no one. I think I was just hearing things. I was that out of it. But really like amazing to run a race like Leadville. And just like, I guess the whole experience of being there for five or six weeks, just really like submerging yourself in that culture was very cool.
And did you know, Ryan, that from then, cool, I want to go and run Western States, like Leadville's a well-known one, and I assume you knew about Western States by that stage already?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, to be honest, like, Leadville was like the first 100-mile I heard about from the Born to Run book. But I mean, after getting like into the sport a bit more, I realized like kind of Western States was the original race. And the year I ran Leadville, Killian won Western States. So got a lot more exposure. And like, I was like, geez, I really want to go and run there.
Yeah.
And I think also, I guess back then, I mean, a lot of like the South African running culture, like the road running culture, they didn't know about like races like UTMB, but everyone knew about Western States.
Interesting.
And I mean, that was, I'll still say, arguably like bigger than Western, and then bigger than UTMB.
Yeah.
Back then, so it was definitely the kind of the race I wanted to do, and a race I spent a lot of years prepping for and going back there, and many highs and lows.
And did you feel the pressure of, having won stuff like Leadville, and then even in the interim training and racing and like making a name for yourself? And I think I'm sure at some stage you would have got sponsors on board. I think, I don't know how early you signed with Salomon and how long that relationship's been going, but did you feel like there was more pressure to line up at your first Western States and when you arrived at Leadville?
I've been with like most of my partners. I think something I'm very proud of, that I've been with most of my partners like just about my entire career. And I think, it's cool. Obviously, it's amazing how the sport is growing and evolving, and it's very, very cool to see a lot more professional trail runners, and the level of professionalism is so much more now, and brands are getting more behind athletes and the sport. But you do see like a lot of chopping and changing.
Yeah.
Which I feel that there's something to being loyal to your brand. I mean, it's got to work both ways. And I mean, I'm incredibly grateful to my dream givers that have supported me along the way. But I mean, yeah, going back to lining up at Western States, I mean, that you are actually, I think leading up to the race, I had a really good build up. I won like Hong Kong 100K, and then I won Ultra Trail Australia 100K.
Yes.
So kind of going into the race, I felt like I'd had quite a like good year already. But I mean, yeah, you line up at a race like Western States, and it's such a hard race to get into. You know, you might only have one crack at it, so you definitely want to give it your best shot. But I mean, in some ways, I actually felt more pressure going into Leadville.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was like 2011 when I did Leadville. That was like when it was the first year or kind of second year that Salomon had like international team. I think Salomon was the first brand to have a fully international team, and we traveled around the world. And the plan in 2011 was that Salomon like wanted to break into the American market, so they wanted to win the three biggest ultras there, which
yes.
was Western States. So Killian had won, and then Hard Rock outpaced Julien Chaurier, and he won that. And then the third race was Leadville, so the pressure was on me to win it. So luckily I pulled it off. But I mean, yeah, there was definitely quite a bit of pressure going into that race.
And Ryan, the early days of like training and racing for milers, I think it takes so much time. And again, like you doing some reading, you chatting to some people, but it's not like now where you can just Google like the top 10 trail running tips and it's pretty decent advice. What were kind of some of the mistakes that you were making early on in your career? I can imagine the learning curve was quite steep. So just chat to us a little bit about that kind of journey.
Yeah, I'd like to think I actually like didn't make too many big mistakes. I mean, I think in 2014 I overdid it. It was the first year they had the Ultra Trail World Tour, and I won the first race in the tour, which was Trans Gran Canaria, and then I did the Drakensberg Traverse with Reyna, and then went off to Mount Fuji, ran a 100-miler around there, and then did Western States, a whole bunch of other races. So like I completely overdid it, and I picked up glandular fever. And it, like, I mean, yeah, 2015 was a rough year. And I mean, I thought that was potentially the end of my career.
Oh, wow.
And at the same time, there was like a lot of, in ultra trail running, there was like a lot of overtraining syndrome going around. There were a lot of runners. And I mean, I've seen it a lot in the sport. A lot of runners are like really strong for 2 or 3 years and then they just kind of fade.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean that was like an era where that was happening a lot. I mean I think Anton Kapryshka made 200 mile weeks famous. He was like, kind of, if you can run a whole bunch of 200 mile weeks and you're in good shape. So I mean a lot of guys were trying to mimic that, and it was all about like volume. Volume. So a lot of guys got burnt out. But yeah, I'd like to think like I've managed my career quite well for the majority of it. I've always kind of spread things out, racing out quite a bit, like focused on specific races, like less is more.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, there's always a temptation to over race. And also with the sport growing, there's always these amazing opportunities to go and race in places like Patagonia or New Zealand or kind of Himalayas. So it's like, how do you say no to like those opportunities? But I mean, yeah, I think it's important to look after yourself. And I mean, I think looking at my career now, I'm probably most proud of, like not the race wins, but just the kind of length of my career and still being able to do the sport I love and also relatively competitively too.
And Ryan, I think it's hard to choose one thing, but I'll try. What if you had to pick one career highlight? It can be one of your kind of adventures or races that you've done. What would you say it's been?
I mean, I think winning Western States in 2017 from a performance point of view was really special. It was like a long journey to get there with some like ups and downs, and just having my mom Vanessa and my son like Max at the finish line out there supporting me. I mean, I think that was really cool, and even like Dean was out they're filming with Jared Paisley and
so
Rainer
cool.
was there. So I mean, that was really special. A project like the Great Himalaya Trail, that was always like an adventure I kind of dreamed of doing one day when I was big. So to actually tick that off, it's definitely really cool. But I mean, to be honest, if I look back at stuff like things that come to mind, is probably like something like 13 Peaks. I'm way more proud about 13 Peaks and kind of hearing people's stories about the epic stories that what they've had to endure and go through to finish 13 Peaks. For me, I'm way more proud about that than kind of a big race win. So I mean, that was selfishly pretty cool about writing both my books. I felt it really helped me kind of file the different kind of chapters of my career, and it made me realize that like what's important. Like, I mean, if I had to say what's my best race memory, it would probably be the K9 search and rescue doggy race that I ran with Tandy. Just just finishing that, and I mean, I've got the finisher's photo, and she's got a massive, or it looks like a big smile on her face. I was super stoked. So it's just those smaller, intimate moments, and like the moments with the community. I mean, even randomly, like often, like you line up for a community run, you're doing I've just like done a big block of training, and you pretty much like over running and you like cut fall, and then you kind of run with a whole bunch of enthusiastic people. They're so excited, they're getting out for like their first run of the week, and it's just, you realize that like kind of how cool our sport is, and like not to take it for granted. So it's kind of more the smaller moments.
Small things. That's so cool
that come to mind.
And Ryan, I mean, you've had almost 20 years of running and a career, like a long career. We've touched on quite a few things that you've done, but to stay in it and train and race competitively, I mean, even now at like UTCT, it's part of your kind of training block to place third in a competitive field is a big deal, and you've done a lot of racing this year. How have you managed to stay in it for that long? Have there been, I know you mentioned in 2014, the glandular fever, you thought, oh, shucks, maybe my career is done. You know, now it's like 10 years later, you're still in it. How have you done it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I always said, the day I wake up and I'm not excited about what I'm doing or like kind of the challenges or races ahead will be the day I kind of hang up my competitive running shoes. And to be honest, that day just hasn't come. I mean, there's just continually finding like new ways to challenge myself, continuously feeling like I'm being pushed to grow and evolve as a person and also as an athlete, and just really excited about the challenges ahead. I mean, I think a big thing is like looking after yourself. Like I think in those early years, not overdoing the training and racing. And then I've always done a lot of like strength and mobility work, just staying injury free, I think is a big thing. But keeping things fresh and exciting. So as I mentioned earlier, like whether it's running like a Red Bull kind of dash up a ski jump, like Red Bull 400 or running 100 miler, or kind of doing the Mark Webber challenge in Tasmania, or running across the Himalayas, like just continuously mixing things up, I think really excites me. I mean, for me, the reason why I got into the sport of trail running wasn't about running fast times or winning races. It was kind of the unknown and the adventure. And that's the beauty about trail running, still kind of finding those adventures. And there's just still so much out there.
And Ryan, I mean, from the performance side, I'm not sure if you'd worked with kind of multiple coaches before, if you were self-coached, but I think in the last few years, you started to work with Jason Koop, who's obviously like a very well-known international coach. And how has that brought like significant change into your training?
For sure. I mean, in my early years, I had a coach, Ian Wardle, and then I was self-coached for a bit. And then Lawrence van Lingen coached me for a bit. And then I was self-coached for quite a few years. And then it was after Rainer and I did Navigate Lesotho, where we ran around Lesotho. I picked up a stress fracture afterwards in my sacrum and was out for a while. And to be honest, I mean, that for me was the lowest point of my running career. It was like the first time I'd actually properly like broken my body. Like, I mean, for sure, I did have glandular fever and I've kind of sprained and rolled my ankles a number of times, but like nothing, I don't know, I felt like that was quite serious. And the recovery period was really long afterwards. And I mean I had to really kind of give like my career some like real thought, and I thought maybe that was the end, like it was time to move on. But I think just being out of the sport, I realized just how much I actually missed it and still kind of wanted to be a part of it. So kind of recovering from that, I decided that if I wanted to take it seriously and the sport had gotten so much more professional, I needed to get a coach on board. And I mean, I'd read Jason's book, listened to all his podcasts.
Yes.
And I mean, the amazing thing with Jason, he puts like all his stuff out there, and you can like pick up on a lot of his philosophies. But yeah, just having him actually coach you has been a game changer for me. It's been hard. Like he's pushing me quite hard, but I think I've needed that. I mean,
yeah,
I was actually thinking about it today, because I mean, ran Ultra Shell Cape Town on the weekend, and already this is my second interval session this week that I did today. So there's no rest. But I mean, I just thinking back, I thought like maybe the kind of things from like after the Greater Malaya Trail up until like Navigate Lesotho, that period when I was doing so many projects that maybe like, or not maybe, like definitely my training wasn't consistent enough. Maybe I wasn't doing like enough training because you're always prepping for an adventure and then you're recovering, where I felt like the last 2 years under Jason have been like really consistent training, but also like really, really hard training too. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited and think I'm getting like stronger and stronger through Jason. So hopefully still some big races to come.
And has he made kind of, when he took you on as an athlete, Ryan, were there changes that he made that you were like, wow, I've never thought of doing it that way? Or I'm just thinking like you've self-coached and worked with so many people. I was like, was there still a margin like for him to find these like performance gains so like far into your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think Jason's a great coach in terms of it wasn't like, okay, you start with Jason and he completely changes things. He realizes things aren't going to change overnight. And I think a lot of my training didn't drastically change overnight. But I mean, yeah, quite a lot has changed. I think the performance gains, I guess, with having been in the sport for so long, I think those gains are probably like getting smaller and smaller. But at the same time with like things like nutrition, and I think just being consistent in training.
Yeah.
I mean, Jason said to me when I first signed up with them, it was like, it's going to take like 18 months to 2 years to really get a good base and for like solid results to come. So I mean, yeah, I think it's literally exactly like two years now. So hopefully next year's a good one.
I don't know if I would ever tell Ryan Sands, I don't think you have a base. Crazy.
I mean, I think it was just because I obviously came off the stress fracture and kind of really had to build up. But I mean, yeah, it's been amazing having Jason, and just, yeah, just his knowledge and wisdom. And yeah. He's also, yeah, I mean, he's just got a way of making you feel confident.
So cool. So,
yeah, really, really cool. I mean, and also the one thing I enjoy about Jason, he's also like brutally honest, which I think is also important.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I mean, also, I guess like talking about like progressing in the sport. I mean, I think I've realized like from an elite point of view, like my days of winning UTMB are probably kind of out the window or gone. But I mean, that's why I'm quite excited to run Coke Gedona 250 miler. I feel like in that space, I can still make some big gains. And I mean, Courtney's running Coke Gedona as well. So I mean, so I think cool. It's going to be a really cool event. And I mean, also again, it's that like from the second I signed up at Coke Gedona, I was just super, super excited, like really amped, like how do I put this puzzle together?
Yeah.
And also going back to Jason, it's really cool that he's done a lot of the races. Like Jason's run Coke Gedona. So yeah, I mean, you can't beat getting that kind of knowledge.
Yeah, that experience that he's sharing. And is that the big goal for next year, Ryan? Is that like one of your main focuses?
Yeah, so big goal for next year is Coke Gedona. Get through that and take it from there. Possibly Ultra Trail Cape Town 100 miler at the end of the year. It all depends on Hard Rock. I'm in the lottery for Hard Rock, but I don't have a qualifier for Hard Rock to be in the lottery the following year. So that's where Ultra Trail Cape Town would come in handy. And also, I mean, yeah, I think I'd like realize again, just being at Ultra Trail Cape Town this last weekend, it's just so cool to run at home. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself. I think, yeah, at the moment, it's just all focused on Coke Gedona.
And getting in, I mean, enough like mileage to do that. I mean, is it quite volume focused and just time on legs prepping for a race like that? Or are you kind of managing, I mean, how many hours are there in a week? It's like, is there enough time?
So currently I'm in like a kind of shorter running interval phase of training. So I'm going to do that. So like November was kind of running intervals and doing a second block now in December. And then from January onwards, it just turns to volume.
Yeah.
I haven't got like kind of exact distances and all of that.
Yeah.
Too scared to ask Jason.
To think.
But no, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a lot. But at the same time, also, I mean, I don't know how much more you can do, like compared to like some of my big weeks for UTMB.
Yes.
I mean, pretty much maxing out. So I don't know if I could do a lot more, but I do feel like being quite specific in kind of figuring out that kind of sleep deprivation, nutrition, and like just getting used to the terrain, etc. Will be kind of really important.
And Ryan, I mean, with the longer stuff and running like through multiple days and nights, I think the physical side of things, I feel like you've pushed your body pretty much to the edge and you've been okay. And I think it was the race director at Leadville who said that first year that you raced, the kind of toughest thing that you're going to need to conquer tomorrow distance-wise is the 5 inches between your ears,
yes.
Like just the mental game. And do you feel like, yeah, how does that fit in for you into the picture of running? Is it something you've like always kind of pressed into and worked on, or more in the recent years you're kind of working on the more mental side? Because I think also the more you race, the more you fail at things, and then you maybe don't have that like beginner's luck feeling as much anymore, but you do have the experience. So there's like this trade-off of knowing what's coming versus kind of ignorant bliss.
I'd always say like ultra race, it's a lot of it's about the mental game, and it's often say it's like the athletes who can manage the low moments the best end up being the most successful. Like, I mean, when you're in a bad patch physically, if you can keep it together mentally, generally you'll get through it. But I mean, if I know when I'm like physically in a bad patch and I lose it mentally as well, then just everything spirals out of control. And I mean, I'd like to think like my head has been like pretty strong and like a a big advantage I've had. I mean, the only race that I can honestly say I feel like mentally has got the better of me is Ultra Trail Mont Blanc. I mean, I think a lot of the other races I've been pretty headstrong.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a big thing. Like a lot of the athletes are doing a lot of mental work and focus training. It's kind of part of their training. It kind of gets slotted into training peaks as kind of training.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah. So I mean, it's really cool to see the sport progressing in that front. But your mental side of things is a big part of racing. And I mean, even stupidly, like doing a race like Ultra Trail El Cape Town, like 55K, just having a good race and like feeling good, you kind of take confidence from that and
into your next training block.
Yeah, and you just gain momentum. So I mean, a lot of it's about just gaining traction or momentum and kind of that forward progress.
And I mean, Ryan, going into something like Coca Dona 250, maybe you can just give us like an idea of what that is, why it's so rough, just for people who don't know, who are listening, but to kind of prep for the unknown. Like I think you've done multi-day stuff, but now this like racing setup is a little bit different. So prepping in terms of that, are you just, is there an element of like, I'm going to put in the like performance work and the actual training and then see what happens when I get to the pain cave? Or are you kind of doing specific things? I know like visualization is like a huge thing that a lot of people are doing at the moment. Like, yeah, take us through that a bit.
Yeah, so Coca Dona, it's a 250-mile race, so 400 kilometers. It's in Arizona, like on a large part of the Arizona Trail.
Yeah.
And Jamil Khoury from Air Viper Running started the event. I think this is like only its fifth year. But Jamil manages runs a number of the races in the US. He's also got like his company does the live broadcast as well for a number of races. So the race has gotten a lot of attention over the past couple of years. And I mean, it just looks really cool. I mean, there's something really special about US races and just that kind of community feel and kind of running through like those kind of old mining towns with just so much history and culture, and just how passionate people are about the sport. I followed the race the last couple of years, and like I said, it's something that really intrigues me in terms that I feel it's like a combination of racing but also adventure. I feel it's kind of combines both those elements, which is pretty cool. And I mean, also like kind of the like more long-term goal is I'd like to do Tour de Géants in the Alps. I mean, I feel that's like a build-up. I mean, that's the plan. I might do Coca Dona and say there's no ways I'm ever doing a 200 miler again.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be the goal. And the nice thing with Coca Dona, it's like a lot flatter. It's quite a, being in Arizona, it'll be quite a hot race. Mm. So living in Cape Town, it's we've got perfect conditions here for me to train for it. I feel like I can get some really good training in, whereas like racing UTMB or kind of Tour de Géants, you got to spend a lot of time in big mountains. So I mean, I'm really excited about that I can go and do my long training runs in the Cedarburg and kind of just, I think the whole build up to Coca Dona, like just make it feel like a bit more of an adventure and go and like explore some new areas around Cape Town and the surrounds. So I guess that's Coca Dona in a nutshell. And as I mentioned, it's quite cool that there are quite a few elites that have signed up for the next event like with Courtney also running it. So it'll be cool.
Have you run alongside Courtney before? Have you guys like chatted during a race? There's, I just, every time I read her Instagram post, she's like, I love the pain cave. Oh. And I'm like, this woman.
Yeah, she I mean, being in the Salomon team, we spent quite a bit of time together. She's like, you talk about the mental side of things. She's like incredibly tough, like mentally tough. I remember when she did the triple Western States Hard Rock and UTMB we had a training camp on the UTMB course after Hard Rock. So she already won Western States and Hard Rock. And I mean, she really battled on the training camp. Like, she was struggling, hadn't recovered.
Yes.
Like, she had like one or two niggles, and I mean, she was like really slow. And then I just couldn't believe it. There's no OAs. I thought she was going to finish UTMB or even line up. And I mean, a few weeks later, she lined up and completely like demolished the field. So
yeah,
mentally she's super tough. And I think your previous question, I didn't quite answer it about like the mental side of things. Yeah, I think doing like mental visualization is quite important.
Yeah.
I always like to visualize like best case scenario, worst case scenario, and then like middle case scenario.
Interesting.
And then even chatting to Jason and like you listen on his podcasts, I think it's important to go into like quite a lot of detail in your visualization. I mean, even if it's like a worst case scenario, you come into an aid station, your crew aren't there.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to run for 40Ks, what do you do, or kind of your pack's broken or something like that, really just like kind of go into it all. And I find that really helps. Just when something goes wrong in a race, you can be like more calm and collected and not panic if you've already like mentally gone through it and like, how am I going to problem solve? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I remember with say Ultra Trail, Australia, the one year I started, but it was a bit of a rush to get to the start, and I hadn't zipped up one of my pockets properly. So half my nutrition had fallen out by the time I got to the first aid station. But it was something I'd visualized and like didn't like panic and figured it out.
Like,
and
I can still carry on. Yeah.
Yes. Not like, yeah, this is the end of my race. And mentally you just start to kind of dig yourself in a hole. So, I mean, yeah, visualization is really important. Also like visualizing like the positives, that you're feeling really strong and like things are flowing and smooth. So
that's so cool. And you can just like lean into that and then kind of see how far you can stretch it. And Ryan, I think one of my first impressions of you, but I think actually I wanted to say this in the beginning, I'm so glad we got to do this, because I feel like I'll forever be known as the podcaster that ghosted Ryan Sands, thanks to Mbulelo. So I'm like, we finally managed to line it up. But I remember being at George Mutt and like getting the mics checked, and I think your book, you'd announced it, but it hadn't come out yet, your latest one, Run, Risk, Reward. And then you were just like telling us offhand like one of the stories about you in Namibia, and then in the interview like a couple of other stories came out, and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's had like a couple of like brushes with death and like come out the other side, and he's still here. But you've got this like extreme side where it's not just about like competing in events or a performance thing. It's like a deep, adventure. And I think I remember listening to stories of you in Lesotho trying to cross a river and like having moments where you're like, we almost didn't make it. And I think you've had a few of those. What do you think draws you to like dangerous situations?
I think, to be honest, like, I mean, kind of situations like going to the Himalayas and running around Lesotho, kind of when I think about it, or even like when you plan the event, you don't think that like that stuff's going to happen. So you don't think it's going to be dangerous. And then, I mean, things have just happened out of our control. And I mean, I think a lot of the time I just realized that like running around Lesotho with Rainer, you just like, and even running across Himalayas, sometimes you're just so on edge.
Yeah.
Like, you're fine, but if one thing goes wrong, like in Lesotho, like we were so close to getting hypothermia, like the weather was so extreme. It's like, if I like sprained my ankle or something happened to Reynolf, like I remember the one night, like our mapping device, it froze. So we were kind of going in the wrong direction. Like,
oh my word.
Like stuff like that can, like, you're so on edge. If we had to stop there, like you would get hypothermia within like kind of 15-20 minutes. So you're like so on edge, or in the Himalayas, like, because I mean, when we went there, we didn't expect the weather for them to have such a late winter.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we got there and suddenly realized that like all the initial passes we've got to go over. No one had been over them that year yet because of the weather. I mean, because the winter was so late. So yeah. You're kind of there and you start the project, and then you kind of you're just faced with all these challenges. Which like Himalayas was very tough. Mm. For me, just being a young dad. Or having a young son at home and a wife, and like you're suddenly thrown with all these life and death situations. It was like, this is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also feel like, I guess I am quite stubborn, determined. So like when I'm like, we're going to do this, that's kind of what I want to do. And like, I won't stop until I've achieved it.
I'm like, how many of these stories did Vanessa have to read about instead of you telling her? I don't know how relaxed she is with all of that.
No, shame. I mean, in hindsight, like, I mean, just so like Vanessa's like always been my biggest supporter, and behind the scenes being like super, super involved. And even like with the Greater Malaya Trail, she was quite involved with like behind the scenes, the tracking and media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I remember like right towards the end of the project, or even like, I mean, early on in the project, our tracker just froze for like 2 days. I mean, Dean and Jared out there.
Yo.
I mean, there's like voice recordings of him like, I don't know if the guys are alive or not. I mean, chatting to Dean after the project, we trekked into the start in Hilsa, but we were like the first people to go over and down the pass into Hilsa.
Yeah.
And then Raina and I were starting that next morning at like 4 o'clock, I think it was. So we had to go back up there in the snow and ice, and it was actually snowing in the dark.
Yeah.
And Dean said to me like the worst thing. So they hiked out or trekked out later on that morning in the light with the porters they had. But Dean said like the worst thing is like you trek up this pass, but basically a lot of it you're on like an ice shelf. Which like a whole section of it actually collapsed and we were going over it. Like I thought that was it.
That's
like
it.
I mean, I completely froze up. Raina had to rope me in and actually kind of pull me or get me through.
Yo.
I mean, chatting to Dean, and he was like trekking up there, he was actually looking over the cliff, which was like a couple of thousand meters down below, and he was actually looking for Raina and my jackets, like the color, like I think
what?
I had a red jacket and Raina had a yellow jacket, and he was looking for those down in the valley. Like
no
he didn't
ways.
Know if we'd actually made it, so you just realize like how on edge you are.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, when our tracking device stopped, I mean, Vanessa, my wife's like at home. Like,
yeah, very like, worried.
Yeah, like what's happened. It was literally like 2 or 3 days. People didn't know if we were alive or not.
My word.
And then later on in the project, we got chased by bandits, which was very hectic. Like, I mean, they meant business. They definitely wanted to kill us.
Yeah.
And it was wild. But I remember just like the problem is with these projects, you get so in this like little performance bubble, like it just becomes about like covering the ground and getting to the finish line. You almost forget about like the real world or reality. So
yeah,
I remember we were chased and we kind of ran for our lives and got down to a military outpost. And I stupidly phoned Vanessa. So when we got chased by bandits, it was towards the end of the project. So we had dropped down into lower villages, so there was more signal. And I phoned Vanessa to say, and I phoned her. This was literally like 2 or 3 in the morning, South African time.
Yeah.
We've just been chased by bandits. They wanted to kill us.
But
Dory, I'm fine. But I just want to let you know that's why we kind of went backwards in our tracking.
Yeah.
And then literally put down the phone without thinking, and then like
oh, my word.
kept going. So I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that I definitely
that's nuts.
wouldn't recommend or do again. And I mean, I guess even situations like in Skeleton Coast, unfortunately I ran into a government seal cull, like wrong time, wrong place. But they thought I was Greenpeace again. Things escalated very quickly.
Yeah.
But again, like Vanessa heard about it, but like hadn't spoken to me yet.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, There have been a lot of tough situations.
Back on the bandit story, how did you carry on? I mean, you said it was close to the end, but you went back out there with Reno. I mean, did you guys have a chat and you like, we're going to continue? You know, was there any concern that those guys would still be waiting for you, or did you have some of help from the military base?
Yeah, I mean, so it was weird. Like I said, like, I mean, Kimalayas, we were like so in a bubble. Reno had frostbite, and it was like touch and go whether he could like get through to the end of the project. So we were literally just head down. We just kept, that's why we were like running through the night. When we got chased, it was like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But we were going through the night. But the guys, the military guys actually followed us up the pass to get past the village where the guys were and kind of over.
Oh.
But I mean, it was quite eerie when after they left us. I mean, like my biggest take out from the Himalayas was just the incredible generosity and kindness of the people.
I've never once
like we felt threatened apart from that situation with the bandits. So, I mean, the final 2 days, wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think we were so invested by then.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even like really think about it. It was just like...
only 2 days to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like, I mean, a project like Navigator Lesotho, running around Lesotho, we got our local herdsman kind of threw rocks through our tent the one night and wanted to kill us. And it was super touch and go. And I mean, I made a promise to Vanessa and Max, like after Himalayas and Lesotho, like I wasn't going to get myself into a situation, like a life and death situation. I mean, if that was the case, then I was going to pull the plug on the project. And I mean, after that incident happened that night, I said to Reno, like, I can't continue. And then the next day we had like a 40K section to get to our support crew. And I'd already actually sent a voice note to my athlete manager. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
We're going to get to our support crew and I was going to pull the plug. And then luckily or unluckily, they had such hectic rains in Lesotho, our support crew actually couldn't get to us at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So they could only get to us like another 100 Ks later. So, I mean, so then we essentially went like another 100 plus Ks, went through the night, had time to think about it and decided to keep going. But I mean, also just that situation, it was a life and death situation, but I mean, just that situation like taught me a lot. I mean, I've often been quite a black and white type of person. Like maybe I've like lacked empathy in terms of like, I mean, if you kind of cross me, that's you like done.
Yeah.
It's like kind of, there's no like middle ground or shame. Like maybe there's a reason why they like did this. And I mean, the herdsman that threw the rocks through our tent, like showed a lot of remorse. The guys were crying and like super like sorry and upset by it. And basically, to cut a long story short, they guard the cattle or look after the cattle for a chief down like off the escarpment, and they get paid in cattle, but they only get paid if none of the sheep go missing or get stolen. But because that area was a high theft area, they like lost so much of the cattle had been stolen, they hadn't been paid in months. So they were like super on edge.
Yes.
They thought we were
there to steal cattle.
So I mean, that's like when you kind of see guys are genuinely sorry. Obviously, I probably would have dealt with it differently. It would have been nice to try and speak to them first. Obviously, they reacted the way they did. But I mean, I think it's important just to understand people's backgrounds and why they react. So I mean, I think living in South Africa and Africa, and I guess the world in general, it's kind of quite all over the place at the moment. I think it's so important to have empathy and kind of understand like people's background and why they react the way they do.
Mm. And so cool that you can like share and document these stories. I mean, now Run Risk Reward's been out for a couple of months, which is great. And favorite story that's in that book, Ryan, without giving too much away, I think people should still buy it and read it. But yeah, what was something as you kind of collecting the memories and putting it together that just was like special?
put me on the spot. I mean, there's so many like cool stories, but I mean, I think for me that when Kane and I went out and did the first 13 Peaks challenge, for me that's just one of the best days I've ever had on a mountain. I mean, I think Kane feels the same way. So I mean, kind of that story is pretty cool, and how I promised Kane that he would be done by lunchtime so he could help Pippa, or she was his girlfriend then. Luckily, they did get married, so their relationship withstood 13 Peaks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, how the plan was that we would be done by lunchtime, and I mean, I think we only finished about 2 or 3 that following morning, and we had only done 12.5 peaks. I mean, we actually didn't summit Devil's Peak right at the end because both our headlamps had bombed, and we didn't want to be those guys that had to get rescued off the mountain. But I mean, just that was just such a like so many cool memories. And then also just looking back at 13 Peaks now, I think for me it's so cool that I meet people, or you hear people talking, they're like, he's the guy that founded 13 Peaks. I mean, it's cool to have something like that. It's not like, oh, he's the guy that won Leadville, dropped out of UTMB. It's like, I mean, I feel it's something cool, and it's a real like give back to the community. So I think that's
13 Peaks is, I mean, you've got like the under 24 hours badge, the multi-day badge, which makes it a little bit more accessible. And I mean, do you kind of frequently get the stories from people, right, like of what they've overcome to do something? And I've even seen you've had like a couple of kids who've been like, I want to do this thing, and they've gone for it. So you've got some real youngsters like doing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just like so many cool stories. I know there was a lady like in the early days, she being diagnosed with cancer, and she joined some friends who were doing 13 Peaks, and she was like super down, not even like a hiker, or didn't spend much time in the mountains. And she and her friends said, just like, join us for the first peak. And she made it up Lion's Head, and she was like, geez, if I can make Lion's Head, let me try the next peak. And she finished 13 Peaks and spoke to her afterwards, and she was like in remission. So I mean, stories like that. I mean, there's also a guy after COVID told me a story that his brother had died in from COVID, and he actually did 13 Peaks with his niece and nephew afterwards, like in memory of his brother. But he had actually never spent much time with his niece and nephew, so he said it was an amazing kind of way to bond with them. I mean, the people that have immigrated and said, like, our last thing we like, there was a couple that did it with their baby. Obviously the baby was in a pack, but did it like before immigrating to the UK. I mean, and there's also like people that have done it for amazing causes. I think it's just something really, really cool.
That's so awesome. And Ryan, do you still have the fastest time on the route?
Yeah, I do.
Nice. I wonder, there was a stage, I think, where there was a lot of people attempting to take that time. Yes. I don't know if there's been any decent attempts recently.
Matt Healy's like done the best.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, I've definitely got the fastest, maybe the second, and I think Matt's got the third and fourth, but maybe he's got the second fastest. At one point there were quite a few guys lining it up. It'd be cool to get a couple of international guys to come out.
Yeah.
But I think like something like with 13 Peaks, I never I thought it'd be more of a running challenge, but actually it's kind of a challenge where more people hike. I mean, I think that's really cool. And I mean, the kind of my fastest time on 13 Peaks is kind of got some awesome memories, but I think my favorite memories are joining friends on the route, or kind of doing it over two days with Raina, Munt and Kane. Just like some of those cool memories. Or even I think the 1 year before I did Ultra Trail Madeira, I did 13 Peaks over two days.
Oh, yeah.
But just completely underestimated the second day and just got absolutely smashed. Like I actually thought I was going to stop at the at the trailhead going up to Lion's Head on the way, going back up Tafelberg Road.
No way.
They had like that kiosk.
Yes.
I thought I could get something to drink then. There was nothing there. And I was like, so I mean, I literally just kind of death marched it back to Signal Hill. And then I just remember like sitting like at the beacon on Signal Hill, just kind of head between my knees, just absolutely broken, like on my own.
And
I don't know. I mean, it's so cool. And there's like, you see the people like coming up, just looking at you like, what the hell have you just done? So, I mean, for me, it's really cool that like you can, do something like that, but just on your own, and really kind of push yourself and just have such a cool experience. And at the end of the day, it's kind of the nice thing about 13 Peaks. It's about you. A lot of people say like, aren't like you worried about people saying they've done 13 Peaks and they haven't. And for me, it's a personal challenge. I mean, if you want to kind of cheat, or, I mean, you're only cheating yourself at the end of the day.
You couldn't even be mad like in that moment at Signal Hill, because you're like, I designed this route myself. Like, this is all me.
Exactly. I mean, I've had some people come up and curse me. I know like the Muizenberg Peak is quite an outlier.
Yes.
So a lot of people said like, why that peak?
Yeah.
I also remember Kane's face when we kind of still had to go to Muizenberg Peak, because I still told him like that first day that it was only going to be like 40Ks, and then I think it went up to 50, and then it was like 60, and then we had kind of just crested up before Nordic Peak, and we got self and Signal, and he got a message from a buddy to say that like they'd plotted the route, and it was going to be well over 100Ks. Kind of Kane, I think the furthest he had run was like a marathon distance before that. So so it was a big day out.
Impromptu first 100K. That's a special memory with Kane. And Ryan, I mean, I know you've got like Kokodona next year, and you do still have a couple of races in the pipeline, but future projects that you're going to still be involved in, do you have like kind of a dream in the pipeline, still something crazy like the Himalayas, or is it just kind of maintaining things like Cape Town Trail Marathon, 13 Peaks? Are you kind of content to be involved there?
Yeah, I mean, there's still projects in the pipeline, it's amazing to be involved with a brand like Red Bull. They're always wanting new ideas. So got a couple of ideas in the pipeline. I think, like I mentioned now, I also just want to be careful. Like, I'm happy to push myself physically and mentally, but not kind of get myself into like danger again. So, I mean, definitely some projects in the pipeline. And I mean, stuff like Cape Town Trail Marathon and 13 Peaks, definitely a big priority. And just, I guess giving back to the sport. I mean, I've been lucky enough to race all around the world. And as we discussed, the sport is kind of really booming. But I'm really passionate about giving more South Africans, or trying to help more South Africans get the opportunity to race abroad. I mean, I feel like in South Africa, maybe things have like plateaued out a bit for a lot of the runners. And it's not because of lack of talent. I think we've got all the talent in the world. It's just lack of opportunity. I mean, guys, when you're in Europe and the US, you get to race the best in the world the whole time, where South Africa, we don't get as many opportunities. So, I mean, that's a big passion of mine, to also be able to give back. Reno and I have also got a sports company, Peak Sport Management. So, I mean, I definitely want to stay involved in the sport as long as possible, but I mean, kind of my plan is to always be involved in the sport. Like, still a couple of races to do on my bucket list. But I think most importantly, it's just to keep enjoying the sport. I mean, I always say I still want to be like 60, 70 years old and enjoying and Table running, Mountain. Yeah. I mean, I get so much inspiration, even Ultra Trail Cape Town this previous weekend, just seeing like guys in their 60s and 70s still out there running, or being on Table Mountain and you see like a group of hikers and they in their 70s. I mean, it's cool that they're still living life and enjoying the mountain. So that's a big goal.
That's the goal. Oh, yeah. I love that. And Ryan, I think before we wrap up, something I listened to, I think I was listening to Ode to Failure, and you said that everything we need is within us. And I think, yeah, a lot of people are inspired by you, by your either expeditions or stories from your book or your racing. And I think you, yeah, even at a race village like Ultra Trail Cape Town, you're so well known, but you'll always like stop and chat to somebody and have time for people, which is so nice to see. But just like kind of words of encouragement maybe for people who are, they've still got some goals to conquer, or maybe things haven't been going that well. I feel like I've seen you go into dark spots, yeah, and come out, like not just in races, but like seasons in your career. So yeah, any like words for people who are still have some goals to conquer, but maybe it's a bit of a scenic route that they're taking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so, like, I mean, I always got the philosophy, rather try something and fail hopelessly than look back in life one day and say, like, what if? I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here right now. I'd probably still be working as a professional quantity surveyor if I'd like kind of second guessed myself. So I mean, I always say that like any self-doubt is like driving with the handbrake on. I mean, it can really kind of slow you down. So I mean, just it's so important to believe in yourself and just go for it.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, kind of have those big dreams. But I mean, at the same time, if you've got a big dream, it's important to put a plan in place to achieve those dreams and have little like mini goals leading up. I mean, if your dream is to run Ultra Trail Cape Town 100K in 5 years' time, I mean, don't just think, okay, it's five. Like you need to put a plan in place and kind of start ticking off those micro goals. And I mean, yeah, I feel also like if you tick off the micro goals, it can help you like realign, like maybe you realize, okay, like I'm like nowhere near to like where I want to be, like I need to make some changes, or maybe my goal is way too ambitious, or maybe yeah, actually kind of I want to aim like raise the bar even more. So I think having those micro goals is really important. And yeah, I think also just surrounding yourself with the right people is really important. Like, I mean, I think community is so important, and like just feeding off like-minded people. And yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of it is just like your mental attitude and approach. And yeah, I mean, I think like people, like a lot of my schoolmates and stuff will say like, it's like you went to run at school. Like, how did you do that? And I yeah, think for me, it's just like, if you're passionate about something, it makes it a lot more easy.
Yeah.
So yeah, just go out and give it a bash.
Love it. And Ryan, last question to round out. I know you said you're not much of a reader, so maybe I should say read or listen to. But what is something that you've read or listened to recently that's inspired you?
Thanks, you've given me an out. So reading wise, I think I'm really fascinated about like kind of outdoor sport and where it's headed. So I mean, I love the Second Nature podcast with Dylan.
Yes, nice.
Really cool. I find that super, super interesting. Like I mentioned, Raina and I have the sports marketing company and that side of things. Yeah, I'm super interested in. I mean, that's something I listen to, like a lot of podcasts. Also again, Dylan, again, Free Trail.
Yeah.
Obviously Jason Koop's podcast. So yeah, a lot of it's quite sport focused.
Nice.
And then also Substack.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, to kind of do some reading on there. But I mean, yeah, I think just with Run, Risk, Reward, having to read all the chapters so many times, I'm a bit read out at the moment. So
no more reading for me.
Exactly.
But that is, yeah, something that everyone else should go and pick up and read. I think that was, yeah, my dad's birthday present this year. We were just like, Ryan's book, here you go. Oh, awesome. And then he ran Thanks. Ultra Trail Cape Town. So nice. Good job. You inspired him.
Oh, awesome. Glad to hear.
Ryan, thanks so much for your time. I'm glad we could make this work. And yeah, I think we're rooting for you 2025. I can't wait to see what comes out of Kokodona and to see, if you, it kind of lights a fire for those like much longer 200 miler events. So good luck
thanks.
With that and the training block. And I hope your coach is kind to you in the next couple of weeks.
Me too. Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks so much. And yeah, great to chat and you finally unghosted me.
Thanks, Ryan.
There you have it, folks. An episode with Ryan Sands. What a cool conversation with somebody who has such a great sense of adventure and loves to push the boundaries. I hope that you all enjoyed this, that you enjoyed the crazy stories and also some of Ryan's sentiments around his previous races, achievements, and we are backing him all the way for Cocodona this year. I think that Ryan still has a lot left to give in the sport, and I can't wait to see how everything pans out. Thank you all for tuning in to the first episode of 2025. Stay tuned, and I will see you back here next week for our next one.